It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Calm.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, we are putting the Durban game behind us. When I say behind us, I don't mean we want to forget about it. But we need to look ahead to the game against Portugal, Springboks in Bloemfontein this weekend against Portugal. But I think the folks who listen to this podcast will probably jump up and down and say, no, we want a little bit more from the fallout from the Durban game. And it would be remiss of us not to go back and discuss a few things. It was certainly a rip-roaring test match, as intense and as brutal as we've seen for a long time. It was always going to be, given the way Ireland set out their stall in terms of their selection, some bold and brave selections that ultimately paid off.
I think, first of all, I think we're going to say that probably those two teams are a step ahead of the rest. And I think from what we've seen in these first 2 weeks of the July test series, the Boks and Ireland are certainly seem to be the pace setters for world rugby at the moment. Saying that, though, if the Boks need to get where they need to get, I spoke about two players, and I don't want to single out any those two players. There are other players that also looked a bit out of sorts, a couple of players who struggled, and it was an intensely physical, brutal test match. But I think Springbok rugby's in the situation now where you've literally got two very good players and oftentimes double World Cup winners in every position. And you have another two or three youngsters who are knocking on the door. Now, since obviously earlier this week we heard that there's injuries to the likes of Peter Steph de Toy, although the Boks are being very secretive about what the injury is. They haven't said what the injury is. They just said he's out for 6 weeks. And then also injuries to Franco Mostert, who's got a broken leg, and Malcolm Marks has got a fractured leg as well. And that incident, anybody who's seen the replays of the incident of Caelan Doris was totally ridiculous. I mean, it was a crocodile roll. It looked as if it was intended to injure. Neither player, him or James Ryan, have got histories of being malicious players, but in that incident alone, they were extremely lucky to get a yellow card. And now Malcolm Marks is out for a couple of weeks as well. That's extremely unfortunate for him, but it just shows you how fine these lines are, and especially when it comes to the officials giving cards, because I thought that could easily be a card for the Irish there. Looking ahead to Bloemfontein, all I can say is that this is an ideal chance. It's an even more important chance now for those youngsters, with the guys out of the reckoning because of injuries. There's some big spots that need to be filled, and not least at hooker. If Malcolm Marks is not going to play against Australia in the first game, then Johan Kroppeler becomes an extremely important player this weekend, as does Andre Hekelfenter. Those two youngsters, they'll probably have to both go to Australia as second and third hookers. And Ben Jason Dixon, who covers for Peter Steph de Toy, is another one. Salman Murat and Arkis Naiman's roles become more important. And so slowly these younger players will start knocking on the door and start pushing their ways into the side. I think there's still a way to go before Rossi dumps players, but sort of makes way for younger talent. But certainly you can already see a lot of them starting to push the boundaries, and this weekend will be the first for those players to have a go in a Springbok jersey. And a number of them we're hoping for good performances so that they can take that and push those senior players further.
So clearly there are a few things that the Boks will have to take out of that test and ponder. I mean, once we get to the Rugby Championship, certainly they will have to refine the way they play. I mean, obviously there is the new attacking strategies under Tony Brown, and they may have to look at their selections in terms of in terms of that game plan and how they want the Springboks to go forward, because it's pointless having people who can't fit into that game plan. I mean, I'm not suggesting for one moment Faf de Klerk or Andre Pollard doesn't fit into it, but it might take more time for those systems to be bedded down properly. The other thing that we probably also need to make note of is the fact that Ireland in the first test, that second half, there were signs that they were up for the fight. I mean, they didn't make the best start in that test, and Andy Farrell after that first test made the point that they were quite courageous, and we saw that by the bucket load in the second test. It's not as if the Boks weren't forewarned that that was going to come. And I found it interesting that, you know, given that physical onslaught, one that they are rarely, very rarely put to be fair, the Boks actually buckled. Yeah, I think the Ireland series would have given him a fair idea of which of those senior players he can take forward. Obviously, post-World Cup, the Ireland series was always going to be the big series that they absolutely had to win, and you'd have to bank on experienced people who have produced in the past. So going back to the World Cup winners was always going to be on the cards for the Springboks. But if you look forward, I think that series would have now given him a real sense of which players can potentially still walk the walk for the next 3 years to the next World Cup. So I suppose, you know, over the next couple of tests, not just the next couple of tests, I suppose until the end of the year, we'll get a better sense of who's gonna go the distance. The All Blacks for two tests here. So there are a few things that they need to clear up. That test also would have presented the Springboks, you know, in terms of a proper tune-up for Rugby Championship, giving them an idea of where they are. But they have one more test before the championship kickoff, and that's in Bloemfontein on Saturday, where they take on Portugal. Any sort of immediate thoughts of what they should be looking to do in this test, because it's a much changed lineup? And what do we sort of take out of it, apart from sort of investing in the future?
Yeah, I think one interesting selection for me in this weekend's game against Portugal is that of Jan-Hendrik Wessels. He's a player that has been moved around by the Bulls from everywhere in the front row. He's been playing hooker under Jake White. But Rossi's made it quite clear. He played a loose head prop for them in the EPG system, their emerging player group. And he's the type of player they see in what they call a swinger role. Now, that's a player that can play hooker or prop and is obviously vital on the bench in a big game, because it means they can change the number of players they want on their bench and don't have to go with, you know, three props if they have that. But, you know, he hasn't been overly – and he's a youngster. You've got to say that he's a youngster. But he hasn't been overly dominant when he has played prop. In fact, he's struggled. And now he's thrown in the deep end at Lucid. And quite interestingly, Rossi this week said that part of the thought process there is if they can take him, maybe they can take an extra hooker in somebody like, you know, one of the older hookers, he said. And when you realize that Malcolm Marks and Bongi will both be in their 30s by the time the next World Cup comes around, you can almost think that he's probably banking on losing one of those guys for the next World Cup. So that makes Jan-Hendrik job increasingly important, and it's just very strange given his situation at the Bulls, because the Bulls see more as a hooker, but the Boks obviously see more as a loose head prop. And the Bulls have got Gerard Steenkamp and Simpiwe Matanzima, and they don't seem as if they're going to change their policy. So it'd be interesting to see what goes forward there. It's a difficult one, because I think the Springboks are in a bit of a catch-22 situation in this, and I always feel when they play so-called tier two sides, it is like that, because on the one hand, your fan base expects you to win and win big. They want to see Springbok tries. They want to see a big scoreline. And without sort of taking into account that the opposition often is a lot better than the fans give them credit for. Now, Portugal beat Fiji in the World Cup. They drew with Georgia. They're certainly a side that can hold their own. They're going to be up against it in Bloemfontein. But it is a test where I think if the Boks don't win by 40, 50 points or 30 points at least, it's almost going to be seen as a disappointment by some people. And I think what's more important, though, is not the scoreline, is more really what players do in that game and what sort of they show, pictures they show Rossi Erasmus in terms of the set pieces, the scrum, the individual flair, that sort of thing. I think we're looking towards the future, and I think you've got to keep one eye on that when you talk about this test match, because it's not really what happens in the scoreline here, but it's more about taking that step forward for the future. And that's going to be the important thing for me. Okay, but with that in mind, we spoke to Francisco Isaac, who's a good friend of ours on Twitter. You can find him on Twitter. He lives in Madeira. He's one of the best Portuguese journalists out there. And we thought let him come in and educate us a bit on Portuguese rugby. We're all big fans over there after the World Cup. But what can they expect? They've got a new coach. They've got a captain who's come back out of retirement. There's a lot of players there that we don't know. A lot of them are semi-professional. So we thought let's chat to Francisco and let him sort of bring us up to date about what exactly happened. So here's our chat with Francisco. Have a listen. And I'm sure you'll come out there, like us, a lot better educated. So all roads lead to Bloemfontein on Saturday, and it's not often that you say that. The stadium sold out. It's a big game. There are seven debutants in the Springbok squad, and we've spoken of quite a bit about that now. But let's turn to Portugal, because not much is known about the Portuguese side, other than the way they all enthralled us and made us shout and scream for them at the World Cup. And for that, we've got a special guest today, Francisco Isaac, all the way from Madeira, I believe, Francisco. And it's a pity you couldn't make it out to Bloemfontein. But I think when you do make it out to South Africa, there's probably a few better places to go. Maybe I shouldn't say that way. But Bloemfontein is a bit in the middle of the country. So
I've heard about it already.
Yeah. Francisco, just first of all, let's start with Portugal. You guys had an amazing World Cup. I mean, they were the romantics for everybody. Everybody was, I think, probably the most celebrated team at the World Cup. And but it's now 8 months later. There's a new coach. They come into the World Champions to face them in their backyard, even though it might be a younger Springbok team. Just what is the expectation? What do you guys look to get out of this game?
Well, good morning to all, and thank you for inviting me. I think everyone in Portugal and or in France or even South Africa, because the players were welcomed by a lot of Portuguese immigrants that live in South Africa in the airport, which was incredible. But the team and Simon Mannix will want a good result, or a good, more than a result, a good exhibition. They did well against Namibia, felt quite a bit sometimes in defense. And it's going to be interesting against the Springboks. Seven debutants in the Springbok side, but the back line is a World Cup back line, so there's no way to avoid it. And it's going to be the main problem for Portugal, aside the scrum, which is maybe the most interesting point for all of us to see how we can deal with you guys, the best scrum in the world, or the best workers at the scrum in the world. And if it can push us to get closer to Georgia, which is our immediate objective, it's to try to topple them in the Men's Rugby Europe Championship next season.
Francisco, if I may, let's go back a little bit to last year's World Cup. Can you give us a sense of how important those performances were for Portugal and maybe popularizing the sport a little bit more in Portugal?
Well, when Portugal went to the World Cup, I think everybody had a sense, they didn't want to tell, but had a sense that we were going to do well, while playing style with Patrice Arsque and so on. But nobody expected we're going to lose against Wales by 20 points, Australia by 20 points, win against Fiji, and tie against Georgia. It was just sheer incredible, and was like, it built up, and even the fans who are not rugby aligned were taken by it, because it wasn't just a greedy defense that kept the opposition from the try line. It was also the opposite. It was a team that wanted to attack from every part of the field, wanted to have the ball in hands, wanted to run with it, and that energizes mainly the younger part section of sports fans, because it's fun to watch, it's fun to follow. And since then, I think we had a bit of a grow in terms of new kids coming in, adults wanting to watch more games. For example, we played in Estádio do Restelo, which is a football stadium normally, but it was quite full, like 15 or 16,000, which is a lot for a men's rugby Europe Championship game that is not the final. And I think that those exhibitions, the way Portugal played, and the fact that most of the team is young, inspires fans to start to follow the team a bit more, and the hardcore fans to believe a bit more that it's possible if everyone works together to do something special going forward in the future.
I was going to say the, I mean, at the World Cup we ran into quite a few Portuguese fans, certainly amongst the most passionate fans in the stadium. And it was great to see, and especially in that part of the world. I mean, Spain's rugby, especially on the Seventh Circuit, has done exceptionally well as well. Georgia knocking on the door, but I suppose the worry for me is, I mean, we keep on hearing things like this World Test Championship and because we're gonna only have 10 teams in playing Test rugby from next year or the year afterwards. And that, I mean, to me, from a romantic point of view, you'd want more contact between the sides like Portugal and Spain and Georgia and the bigger sides. And it's very nice for World Rugby to put one-off tests like this, but I mean, surely it must be. There must be a hunger for it more to play the bigger sides to make it a more competitive, I suppose, rugby international league that you aren't just 7 or 8 teams. So we've seen in cricket just what that does to a sport, and it's eventually self-defeating.
I agree fully with that. Look, I would love to hear from Razi's side what he thinks about this, because, well, for me, he's one of the main thinkers of the game nowadays, of the last 20 years. And I want to understand how a head coach or someone who works sports in all levels understands this. And I think, look, if you look at the past game from Spain against Samoa, Spain was just inches away of winning them. A team, and Samoa defeated Italy 14 days ago. So it's incredible that rugby is progressing. The nations are trying to get closer to each other, but with this new World League stuff, or Nations League, or whatever you want to call. I think it can hinder down the chances of nations like Portugal, Spain, Samoa, Tonga, even the USA, Hong Kong, China, having problem to get there. Because if they play only against themselves, nothing. They will grow to. They will reach a ceiling they can't, which they can't break if they don't play against the bigger ones. Yeah, on Saturday, Portugal will lose against South Africa. I don't know how many points. I hope less than 50 a difference. But it's the game that we want, because maybe we lose by 50 now, and 4 years, if we played again next year, we lose by 40, and 3 years by 30. And that is progression. And it's the only way going forward. We cannot expect progression without challenges. And I think Raby tried that. The World Cup expanded, but at the same time, we had to give up for the National League, which is, well, I understand from the point of view of financial guys that it's supposedly going to bring more money, but I'm having serious difficulties to see it will bring that enough money to cover, well, whatever the bridges they are burning for it.
Francisco, speaking of money, South Africans probably don't know an awful lot about the Portugal team. Can you give us a sense of the professional setup in Portuguese rugby? Are most of the players full-time professionals? Are they semi-professionals? Give us a sense of what the breakdown is.
Well, like a good like a good Portuguese pot, you have a lot of things. You have the pro guys who are in France. They are all in France playing. Then you have some semi-pro guys in Portugal. They play for the Lusitanos team, the franchises that play in the Arabia Europe Super Cup. It's a type of semi-professionalism. I don't know if it's 100% semi-pro. But then you have the amateurs, like the new kids, like Domingos Cabral, Manuel Ferreiro, and some others that are going to play on Saturday. So it's a mix. It's very interesting. It adds a little bit spice to the team. But when you talk to players and when you talk to teams, yesterday I talked with David Gerrard from the Romania setup, the head coach, and he said, we need players to go to France or to England and to become fully pro, because only by becoming fully pro, you win certain skills, certain lessons that will help you to become a better player. If you are already the biggest player in your country as an amateur, you want to, when you go to the test internationally and you are just a mid player, you won't break any ceilings, you won't make any dents, and you need that to push further. I'll give you an example. Rodrigo Marta, Portugal's winger, and who did very well. I know Storti was the best wing of Portuguese side in the World Cup, but even those two had to go to France, to go to clubs, to learn the skills, to challenge themselves, to become better players. And you see now the difference. You had guys from the same generation that are in Portugal are good, but not at the same level. And that's what we want. We need more pro guys. We are having more. You can see in the team now, we have Cody Thomas, who was born in South Africa, is playing in France now, is playing for Portugal, and others. But we need more. And there's a lot of more Portuguese French guys leaving. And I believe there's a lot of Portuguese South African guys ready to play for the Lobos in the future.
And some of those
Okay.
guys who are semi-professional, what other professions, are they involved in? The guys who are semi-pro?
Well, look, you have lawyers that start work from 9 to 6, or, well, let's be real, most lawyers that I know from this from that age grade will go to 9 to 8 because there's a lot of work going on. Dentists like Thomas Appleton is an example. Others are studying. Others are conditioning, physical conditioning coach. Others are architects, and others are labor work as technicians. And so there's a lot of them, and it's quite remarkable because during the Portislaski era, they had two also always two training sessions programmed, one at 7 a.m. if I'm not wrong, 7, half past 7, and another at night. So to adjust to the players' needs, because they were semi-pro, but they needed to go to work. Sometimes, imagine 10 players said, okay, I can come here at lunchtime. I have 2 hours of lunchtime, which is in some professions in Portugal can happen. And let's say, okay, we're going to do it at lunchtime. And we adopted that we do with 15 players. We call 5 players that normally don't train with you just to come to make the numbers. And that's challenging for the head coach and the staff, because they have to adapt to the players' needs. But it worked perfectly well, to the point that in the World Cup, Portugal won a game and tied another. And it was it was only their second best cup, best World Cup. But compared to other teams from the same level, Portugal had a great run at it. And it all came down how they adapted to the pro players, to the semi-pro players, and to the amateur players.
Francisco, I mean, the one thing I've heard around here, I'm sitting in Bloemfontein at the moment, is you spoke about the welcome the guys got at the airport. I think we all know that there's a huge Portuguese expat community in South Africa, as in many parts of the world. But they apparently bringing down 5,000 fans. That's what I heard earlier this week, and apparently. There's a whole Portuguese week here, just to let you know. There at the local shopping center, there's a Portuguese stand there. There's a Portuguese business thing going on. So there's a lot around the game as well. But for them as well, I mean, I think there's a lot of South Africans out there who love don't want to see Portugal humiliated, I suppose, in this weekend's game. They want to see Portugal do well. But you spoke about less than 50 points. What would a victory for Portugal, a moral victory, be this weekend? What's your hope?
Well, aside from defeating the Springboks, which would be amazing, but it's in the realm of the impossibility for me. I would say lose by less than 20 points will be more of super victory, because it would show us not only losing by less than 20 points, but bringing our game plan to fruition against you guys. We don't want a game that's only the poles and scrappy play. We want to show that we can play with our backs, with our loosies, whatever, like that crazy, chaotic, anarchic game. We want to show it can make a dent against a team like South Africa. We proved that we could do it against Australia and Wales, but everyone was debating, okay, it was not the best Welsh team and not the best Australian team. For me, on Saturday, it's a great Springbok team. You have a lot of players that are in your URC. You were considered the best players in the URC this season. You have Manny Leeboch, Lucanio Am, Andreas Thuijsen. You have so many great players that won the World Cup. So for us, it's the perfect setting to test our game plan and to show that it can, claw their fingernails and teeth, whatever. And moving forward, that's for me, that will be a moral victory. And you have a sense of those fans, of Portuguese fans at the 5,000 that go into the stadium. I think they're not worried with the scoreline. They just want Portugal to show what they did in the World Cup. That's a goal, to show that we are a joyous team to watch and to follow, and that can, from the 22 area, suddenly start passing the ball on and create a clean break and run until the try line.
Francisco, can you give our listeners a sense of which Portuguese players to look out for? Who are most likely to delight the crowd in Bloemfontein?
Well, I still don't know the team. I know pieces of who's going to start, but I'll say Rodrigo Marta, which for me is one of the best wing. He is not as explosive as Starty, but he simply works and works and works and works and runs beautiful, has a knack for it. I would say Nicolas Martin, the loose forward, because there's something to him. It's not just like how he goes to the breakdown and steals the balls or the tackling or the lineup. It's all his mentality, and it just inspires the guys next to him to do better. You're going to have Hugo Camacho, the scrum half. He's very young. He's prone to do some mistakes, but more than mistakes, he can create, an illusion that the team is winning or doing it well, because with his passing, with his speed, with his pace. And he's just fun to watch. Then we're going to have Manel Cardoso Pinto, which he's crazy playing rugby. If you talk to any of his companions, they'll say, well, this guy with the ball is crazy, because even inside our own try area, we don't know what he's going to do. If he's going to kick the ball, run with it. Of course, our game plan is to kick the ball out, but Manel is the type of guy that looks to the right and sees just a gap and say, okay, I'm going to run it. So, see you later. I'm going to try it. And the rest of the team has to follow, because if you lose the ball, it's over. But more than once, I've seen Manel step out and just run 30 meters, unstoppable, and creates, elevates the fans in the stadium to that point of euphoria that everyone loves to go to.
So we also don't only talk rugby in this podcast. The podcast called "To the Last Drop" for a reason, because there's other drops that we other than a drop goal. You come from a region that makes some of the nicest, finest wines and port around there. I take it you, a man, enjoys a bit of the glass of red every now and again.
I'm not that big fan of port wine or Madeira wine. For me, Madeira wine is better, but they are completely different. Or the way you drink it or when you drink it are different in the meals or of the meals. But they're quite good. Look, I had a friend from South Africa that came here like 4 weeks ago, and I had a Madeira bottle just bought for the occasion. Normally, a bottle can last like for not a lifetime, but for a year because you just drink snippets of it. I can say to you that end of the night, the bottle started here, it ended here, and I was like shocked because the bottle was not cheap, and I was like, damn. Because the Madeira wine is quite good, but it's a bullet, and you start to drink it, and if you drink like five or six glasses, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to sit up and just walk away like it's nothing. You're going to sit up and start, oh, I'm in a rocky boat. But the guy just sit up and said, okay, I'm going to the car, and until I get to the hotel, I'm going to sleep. So. And that was that. In Madeira, there's something that I really like to drink, and if you ever come here, I would say to go to get poncha. Poncha is a type of, it's made of rum, or pure rum, whatever you want to call it. In Portugal, called aguardente de cana. So it's made from sugarcane. So it's very strong alone, but we then add bee's honey, and then the orange juice, bit of ice. All mixed together, and I can say to you, you're gonna have the best night of your life and the best hangover of your life.
I
I don't
suspect
know.
Francisco will I think he will get stuck into the brandy culture if he's not careful when he comes to South Africa.
Well, I've heard great things about your brandy, great things, and I at the same time I'm very frightened about it.
You shouldn't be.
No. I think we've all had to go through the brandy culture here, and we probably will again this weekend. Bloemfontein's a great place for brandy specials, as we tend to find them around here. But yeah, look, I mean, I don't know about the bullet thing, but just it sounds like a good South African there, doing his bits and not flinching at the challenge. So it's good to hear our compatriots are doing their part.
No, he didn't flinch, not once. And I was looking to him and saying, "Okay, you want water?" He said, "No, just keep going." I said, "Okay, you want
Man.
water? No, just keep going." Okay, good man. Let's go. Let's go. You, whatever the chef ordered.
I think it's great. I think we've got a bit of a better picture of Portugal now, and hopefully they do you proud on Saturday. We're hoping for a really, really good contest, and it's going to be cold and dry, and the field's going to be frost, so that should suit their style of play. And hopefully, it's the first of many encounters between the two sides in the future.
I hope so. I hope so because playing against Springboks, it means a lot to me and to us, and special for me because another side is Razi Rajan. I know everyone has opinion about him, but for me, he's one of the sports greats of all time. And I think for Portugal to face such a legend of sports is great. We can add it to the resume. Springboks, coached by Razi Rajan, invited Portugal to come to play in South Africa. It's something that will last for a lifetime, and I'm happy that Portugal will get the chance to enjoy it.
Hopefully, next time we chat on the podcast, we'll be in Madeira and we can try this bullet of yours and see if it has the same effect on us. I'm up for the challenge, Liam. What about you?
Look, I'm game for most things, so I'm not gonna chicken out, so it's a yes from me.
Okay, I'm waiting for you already.
And on that note, I think let's leave it there. And good luck till the rugby. And Francisco, thank you very much and for your time. And yeah, let's hope it's a great game, huh?
Thank you. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.